maybe beyond the day that John the Saint John the Evangelist died was probably the last good day, or the day that Saint Paul had his head cut off and bounced three times where there's three fountains in Rome today, was probably the last good day for the Catholic Church, if I am to believe the history that is told as part of the Reformation mythology. It just does not square with actual history. And it's just shocking. It really is. It's so eye-opening yet simple that one of the two has to be correct. Ryan.
Oh, absolutely. And it's easy to find out which one. It just go back to the sources. And even in Protestant historians that are faithful to the sources, you still find a lot of the same things. So, but let's move on, though, for the sake of time.
Sure, let's do it.
So now the next bit, Luther then, you know, is disgusted with the practice of indulgences, and so he nails the 95 Theses and starts the great work of the Reformation. Well, this is, again, also, you know, complete pure mythology. So this is the way it actually happened. So Leo X, as we mentioned, expands this the indulgence of Julius II, this ability to sell indulgences and to, you know, especially in plenary indulgences and other things. And so the people who, and the idea that's supposed to be behind it is for giving money piously to the church, thus you'll receive this indulgence. So Tetzel becomes like this big hawker of indulgences, ridiculously so. And he preaches stuff that is obviously completely out of whack with what the church actually teaches in terms of indulgences. And he's a Dominican. So he gets into Germany to expand Leo X's bull on this. And so he's going in and preaching everywhere about, you know, things that basically really are like the, like Luther says in the 95 Theses, the coin goes in the cup, the soul goes into heaven, which is absurd. But it's more or less the gist of what he was actually, you know, Tetzel was actually preaching. So he gets into Wittenberg, and one of the things he does is he transfers the right of commissioning indulgences from the Augustinian monastery, where it had funded university studies in a certain Father Martin Luther's work, mm-hmm. and transfers that over to the Dominican monastery, and so the Dominican convent. So that ticks off the Augustinians to no end, right? The Dominicans are basically stealing, you know, a source of income for them. So Luther's superior comes to him and says, I want you to look into this. And the fruit was the 95 Theses, right? So now when you look at it, about the vast majority of it is Catholic. But it's basically a scholastic disputation and written in just a plain Latin style, very simple, and just basically laying out, there's going to be a disputation. We're going to talk about these theses, mm-hmm. right? And so the thesis is basically your statement of belief on a certain subject. And so in a lot of it wasn't attacking the church's theology of indulgences. It was attacking Tetzel and the things that he was preaching and the abuses in practice. And so there were a couple of things in there that were erroneous, but not too many. So now, the greatest myth of all, Luther never actually went down and nailed it to the door. Doing so was actually a common practice throughout Europe. Cathedral doors were often message boards. So, because he didn't have Facebook or anything like that,
sure.
back then.
Yeah.
Lucky them.
It was wood book.
And so what would happen would be a clerk at the university would come down with a bit of glue or paste or whatever, and he would glue it to the cathedral door. And that's essentially what would have happened. It would have been in Latin, and just announcing a disputation. It was a common practice throughout Europe. That's actually the exact same thing happened when Blessed Duns Scotus in the 14th century had the notice posted that he was going to defend his doctoral thesis on the Immaculate Conception. And so that thesis, or the theses that made up his doctoral presentation, that was pasted and glued onto the doors of Paris, right? So this is not a revolutionary act. Moreover, Luther didn't actually do it. And moreover, you know, nobody really took particular note of it, except there was going to be disputation. Wow, cool, because people were really addicted to going and watching these things, even though they didn't speak Latin, so if the vast majority, or some might have known a smattering of it enough
okay.
to get the kind of the idea of where things were going, but they wouldn't, you know, the average people wouldn't have been able to follow it that well. But it was just exciting to come watch the doctors debate each other at the universities, especially because you didn't have... you know, you didn't have TV, you didn't have, you know, even white professional sports, you didn't get to watch, you know, people stand for the anthem and all this business, right? So the disputations were the thing you did, and it was entertaining to watch, right? Apart from any kind of church processions or other type of drama that you got in, that you had going on. So this wasn't a revolutionary act. Luther didn't actually do it. And instead, he had sent it along with a letter to Albrecht of Mainz, or Albrecht of Brandenburg, the Bishop of Mainz, and another bishop. And so the what happened is in the university, they actually made, you know, people got really fired up about it. And some of the Augustinians are still mad about this whole business of the Dominicans. They translated it into German and started circulating it around. And that brought up Luther's fame and got him more popular. So that, and then he started, you know, publicly opposing Tetzel, and that's when, you know, they're going to start, you know, the Pope got annoyed about it, so they called him to account. And then it all, the whole process against him gets stopped, because the local lord, Frederick the Wise, who was an imperial elector, he had intervened on Luther's behalf. Now, why did he do this? You know, it's actually kind of interesting. Frederick the Wise had built a church where he displayed his very copious relic collection.
Okay.
It was a huge collection of relics. And that's where degrees were conferred from the University in Wittenberg and everything. Tetzel is preaching in the next province over. And so where are people going to go with their money? They're going to go over to Tetzel and get the indulgence and not go to the relic church and give money there. So Frederick, so this is actually a political and monetary power play in the background. This is why Frederick the Wise intervenes on Luther's behalf with the church authorities.
No.
Because he doesn't want to lose the money that's going to Tetzel.
Oh, that could never happen that way. Come on. He didn't care about money. No, man. He cared about an evil Catholic Church with damning souls. Father Luther saved all of them.
So anyway, so here's where we get to some more interesting stuff. So when Luther is condemned in Exsurge Domine by Pope Leo X, there's only five propositions there that deal with indulgences. And all of them, of course, Exsurge Domine is right. None of those statements of Luther that are condemned in Exsurge Domine have anything really to do with the practice or anything that was wrong with it. So, for example, so the one proposition is, so number 17, the treasures of the church from which the Pope grants indulgences are not to the merits of Christ and the saints. You know, and that's, again, false. That is contrary. It has nothing to do with the practice. That's actually against the theology. Indulgences are pious frauds of the faithful and remissions of good works, and they are among the number of those things which are allowed and not of the number of those which are advantageous, as in it doesn't do anything for you. Again, that's completely false. That's against the church's theology on the subject. Indulgences are of no avail to those who truly gain them, for the remission of the penalty due to actual sin is the sight of divine justice. Right? So nowhere in the Pope Leo X's condemnation of Luther is there any condemnation of an opinion saying you can't sell indulgences. There's no, they don't proscribe that opinion. They don't proscribe anything about what Tetzel was saying or anything like that. It's rather areas where Luther actually contramanded the theology. Part of it was Leo X was a son of a Medici, actually one of the greatest of them, Lorenzo
the
Magnifico, Lorenzo the Magnificent, one of the big, you know, Medici in the 15th century. And Leo X, his son, he was a piss poor theologian. He was. And so he had his guys who were the opposite, advising him, and they looked at it and they agreed. So like one of them was Cajet in Divio, and we'll talk about him in due course. He was a brilliant theologian, very well learned, and he looked at the whole situation and said, you know, and of course, and he knew Luther was right on the practice issues and the things Tetzel was doing. But these propositions were obviously against theology, so those were condemned. So what actually was going on? Well, here's part of the key to understanding where Luther is going. It wasn't like a sudden initiative. Already in 1513, so we have, for example, his commentary in St. Paul's it's not so much a commentary, it's more lecture notes on St. Paul's epistle to the Romans. And this is where it's going in 14 approximately. So in his lectures on the epistle, he teaches that the righteous, by reason of which the one-time sinner is now accepted by God as reconciled, is no more than a righteousness cast around him by God, imputed to him, being which, or apart from which, the sinner himself remains as he was before the divine acceptance justified him. And that which brings about justification is faith, and faith alone, by which term is meant the sinner's confidence in God's word announcing the promise of the fact of salvation. No good works done by man can at all avail towards his salvation. Man himself is never anything but sin, for even after baptism there remains in him the tendency to do evil, which is itself sin, and so vitiates every action done by man. All man's acts are sins, but in the case of the justified, God doesn't hold this sinfulness against them, right? And so on it goes. It's there's no place in the whole schema for natural goodness. Even the most virtuous of the philosophers of the old pagan world are necessarily damned. There's no such thing as small sins, no such thing in God's sight as human merit. So Luther is already there. In 15, 13, 14, 15, 16, he's already at the faith alone proposition based on these particular lecture notes. And they were only discovered in the 1900s, just by chance. So that's one of the things that why history is always being revised, because there's always new primary source evidence that forces us to revise how we've done the history. Right?
Okay.
So whenever they come out, revisionist history! I mean, there's a sense in which you have people making up fake histories and things like that. But the idea that, you know, history is somehow revisionist because you're saying something different based on evidence, that's what history is supposed to be doing, is constantly, you know, improving itself. But anyway, that's a side point. So Luther's already there, and the indulgence thing is really just an occasion. And so he starts out, you know, generally with the mold of a reformer, but he's already got this false and heterodox doctrine. And then he goes completely off the rails, and so he won't obey the church authorities. He won't submit, you know, the Pope. So he's condemned in Exsurge Domine. Then he turns around and he burns Exsurge Domine and the entire corpus of canon law and calls the Pope the Antichrist. This is already in 1520. So the whole idea that Luther was a good reformer trying to help the church just condemned him because he was attacking their practices. Again, it's all mythological. None of it has any basis in fact.